This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Are you confused about the state of the Malaysian economy? Would our country's report card be an A+, B, or even a C? Are we heading in the right direction, and is the government doing enough? To help us navigate through these confusing times, and to ask the hard question as to whether the world and even Malaysia is headed for a dreaded recession, we speak to Tan Sri Dato' Lin Sien, ex-deputy governor of Bank Negara and prominent Harvard trained economist. Good morning, Tan Sri. Let's start with Malaysia. You know, our headline GDP looks really good at 4.9% for the second quarter. But do you think our economy is in good shape? And is there a disconnect between this strong headline number versus what's really happening on the ground?
There's no question that there's a disconnect. You know, I'm a hawker person. Every weekend, I'm at hawker stalls. And all of them, without exception, complain to me, you know, what's wrong with the economy? Why is my business slowing down? You know, Bank Negara says it's growing 4%, 5%, but I don't feel it. There are two points I want to make about the Malaysian economy. The first one is not obvious. In fact, it came as a surprise to me. We learned in economics that a country can only grow on the basis of two things. One, increase in population. The population increase itself drives GDP. Second, investment. Let me talk about the first one first. So with these two legs, we have always been running on these two legs. Population and growth of investment. Today, to my surprise, our population, natural rate of population growth is declining. The thing that surprised me is that the fertility rate of females in Malaysia is 1.9. You need 2.1 to sustain the population growth. When I first joined Bank Negara in the 60s, it was 4.5. Today is less than 2. So what happens is we are running on one leg. People forget that. You are running on one leg. In a sense, we can still run because we have imported unskilled labor. That's not reliable. The second one that is very important is growth of investment. If you look at the Bank Negara numbers, first quarter, zero, no growth. Second quarter, 2.5%. That explains why productivity is so low. So when your two legs are not running, how do you expect the economy to grow? Except by pumping. So the number you mentioned by Bank Negara, 4.5, 4.75, are what I call sugar high numbers, you know. Not sustainable. And if you look at, you disaggregated it and look at the numbers, it is pushed by consumption. You cannot grow consumption faster than the growth of your income, which means that if you do that, your debt rises.
Which just explains the high household debt, right? Exactly. Of 83% in Malaysia.
And it's not danger area yet, but close to. And so these are not good signs. So I'm one of those that are not optimistic. I think people, including my old organization, Bank Negara, and the ministers, everybody say, oh, Malaysia is fundamentally strong. How can you be fundamentally strong if you are running on one leg? And then one leg is tired. You know? Secondly, the economy is not reforming. That's something fundamentally, besides propping it up, there's no fundamental drive. That means there's no productivity growth. And the thing that worries me a lot in this area is, unless you reform that economy and move investment, you'll be like that. One of the key indicators why the economy is weak is as follows. Why are foreign direct investment flows into Malaysia so weak?
Especially compared to some of our ASEAN neighbors, right?
Yeah, why? If your economy is so strong, why is your unemployment rate so high? Especially when you disaggregated the numbers. You look at the unemployment rates of graduates, you look at the number rate of unemployment of our youth, they are not good.
Are you concerned about low wages also? Because that seems to ail us for the last 10 years, right?
There are two reasons for why wages are low. One is, of course, imported unskilled labour dampens the wage rate. We should get rid of them. But the more fundamental problem is we are not engaged in industries that enables the labour market to rise up the ladder, rise up value added. So if you are not producing jobs that are giving you higher and higher value added, how can you expect wages to lower? And so this is reflected in your low productivity. All comes back to productivity. And productivity is driven by two things. One, investment. Can't run from it. Secondly, of course, is innovation and creativity. That takes time.
So, Tan Sri, what kind of structural reforms would you like to see?
First, get rid of imported labour. Imported labour is doing us a disservice, and what happens is creating bad habits in Malaysia. Our people are so used to cheap labour, they just become complacent. They never create, they'll never try to increase productivity, but there will be some exceptions. For example, if husband and wife work, we should allow them to import a maid if our people don't want to work as maids. They must be value added overall, right? For example, the population is aging, no question about it. Who is going to take care of our older people? We might have to import some labour to do that. But I object to, for example, importing labour to maintain cheap labour intensive industries. For example, I used to sit on the board of Top Glove. We produce 45 billion gloves a year. Billion, not million, billion. The packing is done by hand by Bangladeshis. Why? So now they have begun to use robots and things like that. That's a good thing. And the government did the right thing at that time, set up a fund where people can draw at cheap rates to fund their mechanization. We need much more of that. In plantations, the same thing. They say, well, the land is undulated, we need cheap labour to plant. I don't believe that with today's technology, we cannot mechanize our plantations. We have to change. So it's first thing, mindset. Before you can have structural reforms, you must change mindsets.
So other than labour reform, what is the other reform?
That's the first thing, labour reform. Secondly, the people who invest, who run our big companies, plantations and our oil companies, must invest in R&D. Change the methods, find new things to do. They must. Let me give you an example of manufacturing. We used to pride ourselves as the world's best value adders for manufacturing. We import parts, we put them together. The chips, we do maybe 6-7 parts of it, 4-5 parts done in Singapore. We put them together, we export them. We keep on doing this without change. Today, the products we do, again, are so yesterday. You see? We have not moved up the ladder. Our people are too complacent. We have to look at the structure of our tax rates and use it to penalize people who don't reinvest their profits, you know, who use their profits, their only interest is to buy back their shares in the stock exchange rather than reinvest. It's terrible. You know, this game.
What about education? Because that will help with productivity, right?
That's my favorite, yeah. I spend a lot of time on education, but education is so fundamentally wrong in this country. You know, to move from now to what I call state-of-the-art education is a huge gap. Mm. But we have to start somewhere. And I think we are not starting it right. The first stage should not involve politicians. It should involve people who have a vested interest professionally or as families. What do they want? And with advice from the academics and people who know what is happening abroad. Put a plan together. Then you bring the politicians in.
So do you think the government is on the same page as you and worried about all this lack of structural reform? And if you had to rate them, right, what kind of score would you give them currently? After around 500 days of government already.
Yeah, to be fair to them, that You know, I know Mahathir very well. I worked for him for 30 years. Mahathir is somebody who will not appoint somebody and ask the person to do something if he doesn't know him. And to be fair to him, the only minister in his cabinet he knows well is Mahathir. Mm. So when you don't know your young ministers and other ministers, it's very difficult to delegate. On the other hand, most of the ministers have never been ministers before. They have been state ministers, but, you know, you run Penang, you make sure that the drains are clean and things like that. You are talking of the nation. And so what happens is all of them are scared to make mistakes. So they pass everything up to the old man. You know, you go and visit Mahathir's office, nothing but files. So he's firefighting. He has no time to do reforms. And he's not supported by good people, especially in the civil service today, to help him in the job. Partly because the top civil servants had to leave because many of them were corrupt and well, for whatever reason. And so he's left with senior servants today who were rather junior previously, who didn't have the technique, the know-how to help plan an economic plan, you know? Yeah.
But the issue also here is that, you know, that's why in a way we see Tun M calling back people like Tan Sri Datuk Seri and Tun Daim, right, back into service and into positions of power and influence. Yeah. But then do we run the risk of trying to solve all our economic problems the same way we did in the 80s and the 90s and not allow young talent to come in and maybe give fresh ideas? And that's where the structural reform comes in.
Agreed. I think there are a lot of young people who are well-educated. The old people like myself and Tun Daim should give away, should stand away and guide them to make sure that they don't make silly mistakes, but help them along. We need new ideas, no question whatsoever. The old structures are there, but they can easily be reformed, can readily be improved. We have done this many times.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Tan Sri Datuk Lin Sien, ex-deputy governor of Bank Negara and prominent Harvard-trained economist. When we come back, we are going to continue the discussion on the global economy and ask, is the world heading for a dreaded recession? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Tan Sri Datuk Lin Sien, ex-deputy governor of Bank Negara and prominent Harvard-trained economist. Earlier, we talked about what shape the Malaysian economy is in and if the government is seriously addressing the issues at hand. Now, Tan Sri, let's look at US-China trade war. It's like dominating the headlines for the last 1 year. There doesn't seem to be any resolution in sight, and it's almost creating this new world order, right, with a global realignment. So it's China versus US, and it's as if all the countries have to decide which camp they want to be in. So for Malaysia, how can we benefit from this? Because there is talk of substitution effect, but do you think it's real?
First thing, nobody wins in a trade war. And there are two aspects, I think there are two things underlying this trade war which people have to understand. First thing is, China will not be bullied. And that's what Trump is doing. And hence you have that impasse. Second, the trade war is about not trade, but technology. Mm. The Americans is using the trade war to disguise their displeasure that China is rising above them in terms of technological development in AI, in robotics.
5G is a big thing.
Exactly. So that is under. So you have, in order to understand the trade war, you have to understand that Malaysia is a small fellow in this game, you know. So we are collateral damage. Unfortunately for us, we cannot benefit from the relocation of American industries from China outside China. They will not go back to the America. Very little will go back to America. You have to understand the supply chain. Mm. So a lot of them will go to countries that can fit the bill. Vietnam fits it perfectly. To some extent, Philippines. Malaysia is too so yesterday. That's why we cannot. So we are very bad beneficiaries. But he provides us with an opportunity to move to the digital world.
Mm.
And we are not at this time. That's why we need reforms. While this war is going on, to take advantage of it and build our new capacities to digitalize ourselves. Yeah.
And that's where I read all your articles in The Star, right? And you've been very consistent in your views that there's more risk than ever facing the global economy. So one of the key risks, of course, is US heading into a recession. Now, what's the chance of this? Because against this possibility is the backdrop that the Dow is actually close to its all-time high, unemployment is at 50-year lows, consumption is still strong. So is it a possibility or a remote one?
I think the risk of recession at this time is relatively low, partly because the American economy is fundamentally still quite strong.
But what about all this inverted yield curve? The inverted yield is an indicator.
Is an indicator. The inverted yield curve, let me put it, history. If you look at history, every recession that we have is always preceded by an inverted yield curve. The inverted yield curve today is not very definite. It is inverted today, tomorrow is not inverted. So it's not so definite. But even when it is definite, the follow-up of a recession is unclear.
So the time in which it takes place.
It can come 6 months after the inversion, and you come 6 years.
It's a bit like horoscopes, you'll be eventually
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. So, but it's only one of the indicators. You have to go behind. And as I said, the American economy is fundamentally still fairly strong. The weakness is actually is in Europe. Europe is very weak. And I won't be surprised if Europe gets into recession.
What about Malaysia? What are our chances, you think? Because we haven't had, honestly, a very bad financial crisis since 1997, when it was really bad times for Malaysia. And we've had almost, 20 years, a good 20-year run? And, you know, history tends to repeat itself, and even economists will say things move in cycles. So is it time for one here?
I worry because the signs are not good, right? When the economy is driven to grow by consumption year in, year out, when incomes are rising below the rate of consumption increase, you are looking at a problem that the country is slowing down. But what happens is the government is feeding it with a lot of sugar, so consumption is remaining down from 8% growth a year about 10 years ago, 8-10%, down to 4-4.5%, and going down. And I think we'll continue that. But what is significant that is not propping up the consumption and income is the absence of investment.
Mm.
So these are two very critical indications. And if you look backwards on the other side, you look at manufacturing and construction. Construction 8 years ago was going double digits.
Mm.
Today is growing less than 5%.
And we do see that in the earnings of some of the listed companies, right?
Exactly.
Because we see earnings growth actually almost negative, if not flat, year in, year out.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you about capital markets. I know you are more monetary policy man yourself, Tansri. But I'll ask you about capital markets because the KLCI, right, for this year, and it's the worst performing market in Asia. Every other big market is up, except us.
Why are you surprised? 7 out of the top 10 companies are GLCs. You should not be surprised. The economy and the private sector cannot be driven by GLCs. Where GLC plays, the private sector doesn't want to play. It's as simple as that. This is the problem with us. That's why we need structural reform.
And we have budget 2020 round the corner. So what is your wish list for our country, Tansri?
My main thing are two. One is, I think our middle class is overtaxed. Looking at taxes as well, direct, indirect, especially indirect taxes. They are the biggest spenders in town and we are depending on them to grow the GNP. But we are taking away their disposable income. So I hope there will be some relief for them to help them save and to help them invest. The second one I think is that we should look at our tax structure in such a way to reward productivity increase. not just all the time telling the private sector, you must pay them a living wage. Who compensates the private sector if they increase the wages when there's no productivity? Something has to give. And so government has that role to structure their taxes in such a way that you reward those who invest in productivity growth.
But last year, we didn't continue with the GST. So we have this shortfall in terms of government revenue. So are our hands tied in terms of tax reform then?
There's always that difficult task of reducing spending. Government has become too big.
But it's also big. Because we have so many, honestly, civil servants, right?
Yeah.
Our fixed costs are so high.
You really got to cut. All the ministers have to go is go and visit all the government departments, you know. Or test all the secretary generals. Tell them, you cut 10% of your spending. Anything more than that, I share with you half-half. Give them an incentive. That means if you cut the next 10%, government takes half, the other one, you spend it on the... So we should not always look at revenues. We must look at spending. And not just federal government spending. States and GLCs.
Finally, Tan Sri, I want to ask you about this era of ultra-low rates. You know, we go back to the global world. It's actually been a decade of it, right? Let's be honest. But now we even have negative yielding bonds in Europe and even negative deposit rates. So does this kind of monetary policy make any sense? Are we at risk of becoming a Japan then? It's like deflation, no growth.
The real risk is not so much deflation as what they call secular stagnation. That over cycles, you keep on stagnating. And that's the problem. Economics don't know how to deal with negative interest rates. It is there, and it doesn't. It runs contrary to all the economic convention that give somebody money
and pay them.
Pay them to borrow. Doesn't make sense. Worse, in all of this, the fixed income people are in trouble. Pensioners, people depend on income from the banks, of their fixed deposits, to survive. They get nothing. And that's why a lot of countries today have not imposed negative savings up to, say, 100,000, 200,000 to protect this class. But that's short-term solution. We need to really look at restructuring the world, actually, in fact, economies, to get away from these negative interest rates. It just doesn't make economic sense to me.
On that note, thank you, Tan Sri, for sharing your very interesting insights with us. I am Wong Xiaoning for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.